Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
One. Bienvenidos and welcome. Episode 39 of the Believe Knicks Show. Matthew Miranda joined, as always, by Stacey Patton. First, before we get into anything, I want to thank the Believe Knicks Show audience. Last episode was our most listened to episode ever, and kind of by a lot, by 25% more than any other episode we've had. So I want to give a shout out to the listeners, thank them for that. Clearly everyone who has abandoned Deezus and Miro is coming over to our show now, and I feel like that's the way it should be. So as one great pod organism dies, perhaps another one comes into greater life. So Stacey, congratulations. You are a rising podcast star.
Not if I'd go that far, but it's definitely been a lot of fun to do this. It's been I've always learned a lot from you, and lucky to pod with Schwinn as well on the Strickland pod. So it's been fun.
Mm-hmm. I want to take advantage of our growing basketball audience by asking you a question about fast food. Earlier today, Jeremy Cohen tweeting about the Wendy's 4-for-4 meal. Let me start thinking about French fries.
Can you read the tweet, by the way? It is pretty good.
That's good. I will pull up the Jeremy tweet.
I got it right here.
All right, go ahead.
He starts off in the middle of a maelstrom. A lot of reports circulating, and I can confirm the deal. Is it Donovan Mitchell? Is it Julius Randle? No. Wendy's 4-for-$4 does include a junior cheeseburger, 4-piece chicken nuggets, junior fries, and a fountain drink. Quite the heist for patrons looking for a lunch or a dinner option from the fast food restaurant chain.
So in the spirit of that, and we've talked about junk food before, but I want to know, fast food-wise, what is your premier...
Oh, that's easy.
Foods? It can be burgers, it can be tacos, it can be... any pizza, anything you can get fast food wise. It's a Friday night. You've got some money to burn. You're in a strange town. You know.
If I'm in Queens and I'm near a good pizza place, I'm going to pick that. But in terms of chains.
Yeah, I'm thinking more chains.
Yeah, there's an easy answer. There's a very easy answer. If I'm on the West Coast, there's a very close 1B, I guess. But for me, it's Taco Bell. Taco Bell is easy, number one. I am, those who don't know, I'm of Indian descent. So growing up, my family was vegetarian. I eat meat, but, Taco Bell, if you ask Indian people, especially raised here, what their favorite fast food is, I would imagine that you're going to get like the highest volume is going to say Taco Bell. It's very veggie friendly, very flavorful. I generally just love Mexican food, and apologies to Mexican audience that would say that's not real Mexican food, which I do agree with you because I've been to Mexico and had real Mexican food there, which was on another level. But for fast food, it's Taco Bell. If I'm on the West Coast, In-N-Out is a great option. But I often still pick Taco. If I lived on the West Coast, I'd probably still pick Taco Bell more than In-N-Out. But when I'm out there, I want the change of pace. But it also depends on where you are. Like if I'm, you know, I go back to Michigan a lot. If I could have the opportunity to get Middle Eastern food there, like halal or something, I'll get it. Mm-hmm. Which I will say a controversial thing for some of our New York audiences. I do think halal is better in the Detroit area than I love halal guys. I love 53rd and 6th, but I mean Michigan has. I mean it has the largest. I think it has the largest Middle Eastern population in the United States. So you can get a lot of great falafel, chicken and rice there. But that is, that's the only place I think where I've had it better. And, but yeah, those are my thoughts. What about you, Matt?
Before I get into that, what is your go-to Taco Bell order? Assuming a normal, you know, normal things are available.
Yeah. Mine is a Mexican pizza minus meat with beans instead. Cheesy gordita crunch, same thing, and a bean burrito. So when I go to, I try not to go to Taco Bell that often, but when I do, I'm going to make it count. And then if, let's say I'm under the influence of certain other...
The weather.
Let's say the weather. I'll probably add in a Crunchwrap in there too.
Okay, I like that. Taco Bell's not my final choice, but it's up there. And Mexican pizza, I've never gotten it with beans, but I like that actually. Bean and rice burrito, I always get. And then probably a Dorito taco or two. Better actually with the beans, I think, than with the meat. I eat meat, but I don't seek it out. I won't eat anything that has two meats in it. That seems like unholy and disgusting to me somehow.
And very American.
Extremely American. Does not appeal at all to me. My number one fast food joint, and I had discovered it fairly recently in life, but it's just so good, is Five Guys. Like,
would you do like Five? Have you been to In-N-Out?
I've never been to In-N-Out. I've been to the West Coast, but I've never been to In-N-Out. That's always the one that comes up.
But you prefer Five Guys to Shake Shack.
Yes. I think almost entirely – well, a couple reasons. I mean, the burgers are really good, but it's the only fast food place I can think of that you can put A1 on your burger. And my mom always put A1 on, like, burgers when she made them at home. And so to this day, like, if I cook myself a burger at home, like, I'm putting A1 on it. So the fact that – I can get that at a fast food place is incredible to me. And not only are their fries terrific, but the fact that you can order a little fries, as they call it, and still get like a paper sack that is leaking and almost transparent, like halfway up the bag, because there's that many fries in it. Like, they give you a cup filled with fries, but there's then like 2 to 3 times that number of fries just in the bag. And like, that's also very American, but that's the American that I like, where it's just like, here, like, if you want to die, this is an order of something sensory, like, go for it.
It'll be worth it.
Yeah, like, if you're gonna go, Neil Gaiman has a story where a guy lives in it's like a Mask of the Red Death thing. So he's in this place in Italy where magically the Black Death has never, somehow it's never gotten in. These people have been...
Is it set during the time period?
So they've been having the same night of debauchery for like hundreds and hundreds of years, because some magic spell keeps out the Black Death. And there's a guy in there who, he at the pinnacle of his debauchery in particular, he gets killed while having like an orgasm, simultaneous orgasms with someone while being like stomped by an elephant. Like, there's all these crazy, like, just specific, hard-to-achieve details. But he gets it. So, having covered now fast food and orgasms, let's move on to the basketball portion.
What else is left in life?
Basketball, and that's what we're going to get into. I actually have a little bit of basketball trivia for you, Stacey. Having to do with everyone's favorite advanced stat, win shares. Last year, Mitchell Robinson led the Knicks in win shares, which he has now done 3 of the past 4 years. Who was the last Knicks center, besides Mitchell Robinson, to lead the team in win shares?
In 1 year?
Yes.
Ooh. I mean, the temptation is definitely Pat, obviously. I have a funny feeling it's Tyson Chandler. And I'm trying to remember is this where center was their primary position? Or
yes.
It's a no doubt about it center.
Yes.
Okay, so I'm going to leave Amari Stoudemire out. I'm going to go with Tyson Chandler.
That's a good guess. Tyson Chandler, I believe, is the second to last Knicks center. There's someone between Chandler and Mitch.
KP?
Not Kristaps Porzingis.
Kyle Quinn?
I love Kyle Quinn, but it is not.
We should get into this, because I was talking with Benji Ritholtz. If you don't follow him, you should. Does a lot of great threads. But with the Knicks' newest center signing, or I guess not newest, but newest new center, Isaiah Hartenstein, I see a lot of parallels between him and Kyle Quinn. I do think Hartenstein has a higher ceiling, but in terms of the passing and all that. So between Chandler And oh, Robin Lopez?
Not Robin Lopez.
Wow. I guess they've had some good centers.
I would not have guessed this person.
Total win shares.
Total win, end of the season, all the Knicks total win shares, this person had the most.
It can't be Joakim Noah. He played a little bit.
He didn't play that much.
He didn't play that much. Kanter?
Enes Freedom.
Wow.
Good call. I did not know. I would have gotten that.
I mean, he puts up rebounds and
rebounds like per minute he puts up.
Hey, maybe he is out of the league because of liberal bias. You know. Who knows?
We gotta have Enes on the show fairly soon.
Side note.
Yeah.
Sorry.
No, go ahead.
So I have one of my best friends is a Laker fan, and so we always used to watch games together, always talking about hoop and all that. And I used to, especially when Mitchell Robinson was first, like a rookie, second year, I would complain about Kanter so much because I thought Mitch was so much better at the things that Kanter was bad at.
Yeah.
Specifically his mobility on defense. And I wanted more minutes for Mitch, so I would always complain about Kanter and his defense. And then for my birthday one year, I don't know if you've heard of Cameo.
Yeah.
So he paid, it must have been 50 or 60 bucks or something. So I was like, you could have got me something like I could use for 50 or 60 bucks, but he got me a Cameo from Enes Kanter, and he told Enes Kanter that I was his biggest fan. So like Enes wished me a happy birthday. So
your friend is awesome. that's very, very good. Two more trivias. Who was the last Nick guard to lead the team in a full season in win shares?
Chris Duhon?
Sadly, it is not Chris Duhon.
I'm tempted to say Rose, but Randall definitely led the team that year. I'm tempted to say Rose part one, but I still feel like Robin Lopez probably did. Or Melo. Felton? He was on good teams, though. It's not Felton, right?
No.
He's definitely the best, I think, Knicks point guard in a long time. Marbury?
Not Steph. This person's tied for the second lowest of all the win share totals every season that have led the Knicks. This person's is tied for the second lowest.
Were they a bona fide point guard, combo guard?
Guard, just a guard. It's any guard.
Yeah, then it's Jamal Crawford.
It is Jamal Crawford, yes.
Yeah, that gave it away. Sorry, Matt.
Once you say all guards, yeah, it's pretty much that. The only Nick guard, the only Nick player ever to lead the team with a lower win share total was Trent Tucker in 1986. For those of you who remember those glory days. Lastly, I love this one. Patrick Ewing holds the record for the most years leading the Knicks in win shares, having done so 9 times. Since Ewing last played for the Knicks, who has had the highest single season win share total of all the Knicks?
Well, I know the best player was since then.
It is not RJ Barrett. I'm sorry.
But specifically, win shares is a stat that hates this player. I'm gonna go with Amari Stoudemire instead of the player I'm thinking of. But
not stat.
Okay, I'm just gonna say Melo, but I think it's not him.
You would think Melo. It's not Melo.
I mean, Dave Barry was the guy who created win shares, and he was notorious for like hating Carmelo. I think that's part of the reason why 538's first, or like his algorithm hated Carmelo. But that's why 538's first like player model. Like for baseball, it was Pacoda. That's what Bill James came up with. They made it Carmelo because.
Oh, okay, yeah, I remember that.
Does not Melo. Who has led the. So can you repeat? Who has led the Knicks?
Ewing, who has had the highest single season win share total of any Knick?
Julius Randle?
It's not Julius Randle. That's an excellent guess. It's not Randle. I would not have gotten this one either.
David Lee?
David Lee led the team about 4 years in a row. It was not David Lee.
Zach Randolph?
No Zach.
I am stumped. Yeah, I don't think I can get this one.
King of Vaseline himself, Stephon Marbury.
Yeah.
Had 11.7 win shares in, I think, 2005.
I do got to say, like, Stephon Marbury is one of the most talented players that's ever played for the Knicks. Like,
yes.
I think the way it all shook out, there's lots of people to blame or whatever, himself included. But I just remember being a kid and I was like, are we really at the point where we're benching this guy? Like, I get it. He has his shit, but his attitude's so bad that, and I, you know, knowing now, like, I think probably it was, but that guy was an incredible player.
I still don't think I have ever been more excited for a single regular season game as the first one after they traded for Marbury. Because it had been a few years since they were any good. McDice had never, it really wasn't there, and they weren't good. And at the time, the Knicks being bad 3 years in a row felt like an eternity. And I remember they were playing in Cleveland, and it was freezing. It was the winter. It was like freezing where I was. It was freezing where they were. And this is like pre-LeBron. These are not the glory days of the Cleveland Cavaliers. It was not a game on the calendar that you usually would care about, but I was like all day. I felt like I was playing like all day. I was just waiting for like this game to start, and like I couldn't wait to watch a point guard and a New York point guard and an all-star point guard. That did not work out, but that night, man, I was not as excited for Melo. Because even by then, the Knicks were, like, decent. I thought Marbury was going to pull them, like, I really thought he was such a big deal.
Yeah. Same here.
So, let's talk about, it's the dog days of the sports season. And the Knicks have done their part to contribute to the dog days by having a mild controversy over whether or not the media should be invited to cover, to hold a press conference. The Knicks introduced Jalen Brunson, was it yesterday?
Yeah.
Knicks introduced Jalen Brunson yesterday.
It might have been 2 days ago, sorry, yeah.
Yeah, but this week they introduced Jalen Brunson, and as has become more and more common, there was no media present, there was no media invited. It was kind of a closed, you know, circuit MSG thing. And some people are bothered by this, and some people are really not bothered by it. I am surprised, and it might just be a vocal Twitter sect, but Chris Herrien wrote about this too. Like, I'm very surprised at how many Knick fans don't just seem like ambivalent toward the media's presence, but seem actively opposed to it being there. Jesse, what do you think about this issue? What has stood out to you from it?
Yeah, I mean, I think the first thing is, even if someone agrees with you in principle, you have to look at what that stance does for them. So what has the media done for Knicks fans? They have belittled us for many years. And this is another thing. I talked with Dan Favell, who I disagree with on this, but is a terrific writer and had a pretty good nuanced stance. His point was, you should be able to separate the Stephen A. Smiths from the world, from, you know, the Fred Katzes of the world, or people who are taking a more rigorous look. But at this point, I don't care. I think that we watch the Knicks to have fun, and the media, I would say, has actively, the mainstream media, and again, I know I sound like a Trump supporter saying this, but ESPN, the beat writers on the popular, on the tabloids, people like, I'm going to call them out, Stefan Bondi. Berman, I think, is kind of a self-conscious troll. We're all kind of in on the joke, so I actually don't have as much of a problem with Mark Berman. But especially when the Nets were coming up, it seemed almost like it was an abusive thing. Like, they want Knicks fans to just want to hate themselves and be self-loathing. And anything good or anything that happened with the team, it would always be, you know, if you're excited about the young guys, quickly sucks, right? If you're, you know, if you think that Leon Rose has done a good job, well, he didn't draft Herb Jones. He traded the 19th pick, which eventually turned into Cam Reddish. It's just constant. And I think it really is more of a problem. It's like, if you look at it like a barbell curve, right? If you look at it like a barbell, right? So you have on two extremes, you have certain, so at the most local level, you have people like Stephen Bondi who are just spouting this garbage. It's extremely biased. And then on the other hand, you have, you know, people like Stephen A, right? Stephen A is a performative clown.
Yes.
That is put up there to pretend to be a Knicks fan. And I mean, it's disgusting stuff. I remember when they drafted Porzingis. I know we're not the biggest fans of Porzingis right now, but he went on a, he channeled, he quoted Malcolm X, or he quoted the Malcolm X movie, right? He said, "When bamboozled, let amok, run astray," right? Because they drafted Kristaps Porzingis, and he said, and it was, you watch with Stephen, it was purely because he's European. There's not a whole lot of evidence against that. Because 2 weeks later, when Porzingis had a good start to his season, he was like, "I just said that. I hadn't really watched him play. I was told that he was a project that was 2 years from being." He said, "I was told he was a project that was 2 years from being 2 years away." So what the fuck are you talking? You haven't watched him play. What value are you adding? What is your opinion that based on the Knicks drafting a project, my opinion counts? That's my big question. Like, the people that they would be inviting to this Jalen Brunson press conference, what value is being added? Well, they're not allowed to do their jobs. Are there value? Are their jobs creating value? Now you might say, well, they can hold, like, why don't Knicks fans want their front office to be held accountable? I agree with that. I think that it would be good to ask certain questions. I don't think the Knicks beat has been reliable at that either, and I don't think most beats a lot across the league are. And when they are, then you get these testy exchanges, which we got some from Tibbs last year. I think there are local beat writers. I'll highlight Ian Begley, who will ask questions that often result in the kind of, you know, in tough questions, right? But what I really wanted Knicks beat writers to ask, and this is someone like even Stephen Bondi, who gets a hard on every time he gets to shit on the Knicks, wasn't asking Tibbs in post-game press conferences. These guys weren't doing that. Begley was willing to ask some of these questions, and then he would get a standard answer. But what was Tibbs doing last year? Why was Alec Burks starting at point guard, even though he is a shooting guard? And it hurt his efficiency to do, though. Why was Emmanuel quickly getting 12, 13, 14 minutes a game when he clearly had the highest impact? 25 of the Knicks, out of the 25 Knicks top-performing three-man lineups, Quickly's in three of them. Why was Obi Toppin getting 9 minutes per game? If effort and all of these things, you earn your minutes, why can Julius Randle get 40 minutes a game even when he's screwing up and his backup is playing his ass off? And we got some bullshit answer from Thibodeau about, well, everyone loves the backup quarterback. It's been, they have failed at their jobs. And so even if you want me to believe, yes, okay, all that aside, the Knicks should still have a more open policy. Fine, but I just can't have any sympathy for these people. And I'll go to the last rung on this. It's also, you know, if you're telling me that there are workers who have really come and struggled to earn their place, you know, hurting their income, hurting their bread is kind of a fucked up thing to do. I don't think that applies to most beat writers, because you see these positions. And how do people come up in the beat? They take unpaid internships. Who is available to take unpaid or they get those unpaid internship from knowing people that will put them in good positions. 17, 18-year-old kids, like, how else are you going to differentiate? I don't think we're really talking about people who have, you know, not had advantages, like unprivileged people. I think we're talking about people that have gotten these positions, however well they're paid now, through an unfair process. So I have zero sympathy for them. Very little. I respect certain people. I respect someone like Chris Herring. Although even in his article, he acknowledged that a lot of the coverage is pretty awful. So do your job, provide value, and I think the results will come. And if the results don't come, then yeah, we got your back in that case. But I don't think they're doing nearly enough to really be able to take this kind of soapbox.
So am I correct that if say, Begley, Zach Lowe, Fred Katz, and you know, Brendan Brown or somebody like that were to be invited, like a small number of people like that, like, are you of the opinion that, like, you don't want the press there, period? Or is it that you don't want the press that you consider to be failing in their job to be there?
No, I think you want to invite as much as possible. And I think the part of the Knicks being retaliatory or having that ability is uncomfortable. I won't deny that. If you're going to invite someone, you should invite as many people as possible. Obviously, there's some restrictions. But I think I would like to see more. I mean, Alex Wolf should be invited, right? You should be invited. You know, people like that should be invited because I think they've done a better job covering the Knicks. And there's a reason why the Knicks populace at large. And by the way, like, the Knicks populace at large who claims media bias still criticizes a lot what the Knicks do. And they read writers who criticize a lot what the Knicks do. You know, look at Schwinn. Schwinn is hypercritical, extremely critical of Tibbs. I would, if there was a day where Schwinn got a pass to the Knicks, you know, a press pass to the Knicks for an interview, I would love that day.
It might be fun.
But so it's not just about negativity. It's about kind of trying to be rigorous. And whatever your thoughts on Schwinn, he's very rigorous in his thinking.
Yes.
So, you know, it's more about that. To answer your question, no. If they're going to invite some, they should invite all. But I get why they limited, especially at an event like this where you know they're just going to get questions about Donovan Mitchell. And again, it's about the value add. Like, if Leon Rhodes...
At the start of the press conference, like, hey, just so everyone knows, we're here to talk about Jalen Brunson. There's not going to be any Donovan Mitchell questions. Can't you just say that and, like, that's basically it?
You can still count on certain reporters trying to sneak one in there. That's a fair point. The other one would be, you know, there could be other uncomfortable questions about tampering, right? And then the Knicks kind of, it's tougher to make a statement about that, which I do think is a bullshit investigation.
Yeah.
Did the Knicks tamper? Yeah. Because Jalen Brunson probably has dinner with the Knicks' top assistant coach a fair amount of time. I think he should be able to discuss anything he wants with that assistant coach in particular.
Yes.
Without the NBA fining him. So,
yeah.
And you're seeing writers like keep talking about this story. Like, yeah, Leon Rose was his godfather. His dad works for the Knicks.
If this was replace the name Leon Rose with Jerry West and everything else happening in this story, I feel like gets a total free pass. If it was,
yeah.
If Jerry West was Luka's godfather and the Lakers hired Luka's dad or coach to be in a, like, it play, there is something. I do agree, and I think it's because as the national media has bloated, it's become more general and therefore more ignorant in general. But there is a population, certainly in the sports media, that has made a little cottage industry specifically out of, like, poking the Knicks and Knick fans. Like, I don't.
Yeah.
I have followed some lousy teams my whole life. Like, the Rangers growing up hadn't won famously in 54 years. The Jets have been a disaster my whole life. The Mets are frequently embarrassing. But I've never seen, and it's known. Like, the national media knows the Jets suck. But whereas I think Jet fans are rightfully more masochistic than Knick fans, there's not a lot of outsiders who just make it a point to beat a dead horse about how bad the Jets are. It does happen with the Knicks. I think it happens with the Knicks because it's such an enormous, pokeable fan base that hasn't had...
Do you think we have a bigger fan base than the Jets, Giants? Are we the biggest fan base in New York?
I would wonder if it's Yankees still just because, but I think after that, yeah, I think they probably are. just because there is, it's the only sport where there has never been an alternative, and there still isn't. So, I get why things maybe are different with the Knicks. I do agree with you 100% that I can't remember the last, like, as a kid, I remember when you would watch SportsCenter or you would watch, you know, the NBA on NBA, whatever, and the national press would start talking about the Knicks, like, you were excited because the team was good, and it was kind of like, oh, like, my team's getting props, like, my team's getting attention, like, you would sit through it because you just, you kind of had this pride that your team was being spoken about. And now I feel like I can't remember the last time I cared about what anyone national and what most people local have to say. Like, Berman, I feel for as a human being. I think Berman is making the best of, like, probably a slightly inhuman job, like, where he has to have something to say about the Knicks. Like, I don't have Berman's responsibility or deadlines or history. And there's times just for posting or the Strickland or a pod that I'm like, what the hell is there to talk about, like, today? And Berman, like, has to have shit. Berman has to be out there dealing with the players and the coach. He has to deal with them.
And you can tell he's kind of in on the joke, right? His personality.
Yeah. Yeah. I think, like, I respect Berman. And I like Bagley, and I like Katz. Rokunov was good when he was there. But there's something to me a bit, scapegoaty about, like, we all know who we're talking about. We're talking about Bondi. We're talking about Isola, if he happens to be involved at that point. And we're talking about, you know, Stephen A. and basically ESPN. They're not really a part of the Knick universe that much. Like, the national press is not, like, at all. Like, I just don't understand how there is a combination of factors that coincidentally lead to the Knicks being, like, the one team in sports that seems to have this much of a complex about the world is not fair to us. And one reason it bothers me more particularly with the Knicks, like, you can make an abstract argument that a team like the Knicks, a flagship organization in a league that's been there since day one in the nation's largest city, is not just a business or not just a franchise, that there is an element to it being a bit of a public trust or a club, more than, say, like the Charlotte Hornets are. The fact that for 40 years, the Knicks have not paid income tax at Madison Square Garden because of a loophole that the Koch administration didn't close, to me, you should be not only then open, you should want to be maintaining good public relations as much as possible. And maybe they understand the world in a way I don't, and maybe they know, like, we're never going to lose that tax break, so fuck them. But there's something extra offensive and gross to me about, you're getting a tax break, you really don't need this tax break. Like, you really don't need this at a time when everybody else is deprived, and you're also like, fuck you, we don't need to talk to you. Like, everything you're saying I get, and I cannot say that anyone who feels like, fuck the media, I don't need them based on what they've given me in life, that's on the media. Like, I can't blame people for having a fair perspective about an institution that has failed them, like, completely in terms of what it's supposed to be. But let it be a better organization than the Knicks that you grant that slack to. Like, I don't know. The tax break thing, part of my brain's like, that shouldn't matter. It's a philosophical debate. But part of my brain is like, no, that does matter. I literally wrote an article that came out yesterday, I think, for the Strickland, about how basically since Leon Rose arrival / basically end of Phil Jackson era through now, that the Knicks have been so competently run, like so much of just a normal kind of franchise, and even a franchise that I feel like has generally speaking made really only good moves under Rose, that I'm ready to start rethinking, like, maybe James Dolan has grown. Maybe he's matured. Maybe he's turned things around, because some of the things the Knicks have done.
Thank you for listening to Believe. You can show support to your host by subscribing to the show and giving us a 5-star rating on your preferred platform. Check us out at Believe.com and search for BLEAV on YouTube.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.